Thanks so much for inviting me. With that one list, the one thing I haven't done much work in is health disparities. So, I am no particular expert. I do some social epidemiology with a colleague mentioned here, Jennifer Ahern, and some other things. But there is these sort of universal problems with the analysis of very complicated problems, which obviously studying disparities or inequities and their impacts on health are. And there's actually a lot of overlap of what I'm going to talk about in the previous talk. My slides, because I'm a statistician, will be covered with meaningless equations, but that's not the important part. The important part is I'm going to try to sort of give you a feel for sort of a different philosophy of estimating the impacts of particular factors of interest, whether they be interventions or potential interventions, or whether they be risk factors in the context of complicated data and complicated problems, a lot of competing factors, different pathways, things like that. Ones that do not rely on what has become sort of standard in epidemiology in many fields, which is something like logistic regression, assuming a particular model, adjusting for things in a very sort of formulaic way and getting the estimate back, that there is actually progress in this field, and I think it's very relevant to the kind of research you do because it allows one to ask more targeted questions of what you're really after from a data set and not just rely on the coefficients that are returned from a regression. So all models are wrong is a famous quote by a Box a statistician that the second part was some are useful. I'm actually going to argue that that is a somewhat old-fashioned way of looking at it. All models aren't wrong. Some are actually right. And I'll say what I mean by that later. So what I'm going to talk about is basically comes from the causal inference literature, which is an attempt to define a parameter of interest as a theoretical intervention. Even if you don't do an intervention study, you have an observational study on neighborhoods or individuals, and you're interested in looking at can I estimate from this data what is the cause, the competing causes and their impacts, their measurable impacts on the outcome, and how much information do I have in the data? That's the goal of statistics. And I'm talking, as opposed to the next talk, I'm really talking in the context of relatively large samples. This the stuff I'm talking about, not very practical if you have sample sizes of 10 or 20. This is when you have relatively large studies. So there's a lot of jargon here, but I hope to make it understandable by the end. So semi-parametric, that's a big word, and it has a lot of meanings. What I really mean is the goal of estimation statistics should be based on a model of what you actually know about the data. And generally, in most of the fields that I've worked in, that means almost nothing. We don't have a theory for the fact that a disease should be related in a logistic regression to a particular set of risk factors in an additive way, main effects and nothing else. That in fact, we should estimate things admitting what we know and not pretending what we don't know. You know, if we have an intervention trial, we actually randomize things, we need to know a lot more. That's why they do it, because we in fact know that we don't have to worry about extraneous factors, or extraneous is probably not the right word, but factors that are not related to the treatment of interest. But in most cases, we know very, very little. Causal inference has a lot to do, again, with the beginning of Latt's talk by Dr. Williams. It's really about what is the parameter of interest. Is the parameter of interest age-adjusted something, or is the parameter of interest the difference in age groups? That you should define particularly what you're interested from the start, not as a byproduct of some model. And of course, as shown, if you define the wrong parameter, that one that doesn't target the question of interest, you get the wrong answer. So it's a fairly straightforward thing, but it has consequences for what we're going to talk about. Now, I think people often have sort of a knee-jerk reaction to this in a negative way, which I do myself, because you're always worried that if you have some black box looking at your data that it's just going to dig and find some pattern. You'll have no idea what that means. But there's a lot of ad hoc model selection that goes out in the world when you get data. As people that are working with epi scales type studies know, you get the data, you try interactions, you try this and that. And there isn't any really often a systematic approach at coming up with that final model. And also, you look through a very small subset of the possible models that could relate the outcome to all these risk factors or other things of interest. And in the end, what that means is you don't really know the true amount of information in that last estimate you get. That estimate, as it, when you get the standard error in that, typically accounts for no looking at the data. In fact, that's a big no-no. So you want something that acknowledges you don't know much, but you want, need something that looks through a lot of models. And it turns out there are such things exist. An estimator is related to that. A true estimator is something that's reproducible, that everything I did to get an estimate at the end of, let's say, some adjusted association of the impact of an inequity on a health outcome, maybe adjusting for other factors, I need the computer to be able to replicate everything I did. So if I did a lot of things that are sort of ad hoc and looking at the data in different ways, it is not, it is no longer reproducible by someone. I don't really know the true variability of that estimate because, you know, standard error is a measure of the sampling variability that includes the experiment all the way from the collection of the data to what you did with the data. That's part of the experiment. If you do not include that in the inference, then you get inference that could be wildly optimistic or wildly anti-conservative, so or conservative. So you want a true estimator, and that's where the machine part's going to come in as a potentially important part of the package. Again, potential interventions is you. It'd be nice to find parameters that have some meaning about what you would do as somebody working in public health. That I have data, and I obviously you're going to have to make lots of assumptions between gathering the data, doing the analysis, presenting the results. But you might as well try to get things that that try to quantify what would happen if, for instance, what I'm going to talk about, if I reduced the density of alcohol establishments in a neighborhood or increased them, as the case may be. And coefficients and regression don't do that directly, but there is a way to generate those that are more relevant to particular questions, be they the impact of epigenetic factors or more complicated things like what are the pathways through which disparity operates. Finally, this last part is, this is particularly important, having all these components. When I have very high dimensional data, it just means lots of covariates and lots of potential competing causes. There's no way I can try every model by hand anyway, which I just said you shouldn't do, but you can't do it anyway. You need something that is able to look through them and find the model that appears to fit the data best among a large class but doesn't overfit. And you want to be able in the end to get inference that is a standard error that you can trust. And so, you know, we're not there yet, but the methodology is being developed that will allow more of an automated way of doing this. And the important, so the researcher will concentrate what the question is, what do I really know about the data? Is there things like censoring in the data, which is also in the last talk? Is there people uncounted? That's all included. And then the procedure will look through and try to find the best estimate of the particular parameter of interest. Okay, so the idea is this first quote, which has really been guiding statistical applications in many fields for a long time, is the idea that, of course, I don't really believe my model is true, but at least I could hope that there's some reflection of what's going on underneath, and I can, and those associations will have some meaning. And I think that it's been a very useful tool, these types of logistic regression, linear regression, things like that over the years. But the problem is, if they're false, you don't know whether they're useful or not. So to say some are useful, of course, for any one study isn't terribly useful. You might know then repeated studies and things converge to a decision, but in the context of one study, it's not a helpful guide. What you really like is to estimate things in a very big model, which means something that tries lots of different things to see if it fits the data, but doesn't do it in a way which, of course, just data dredges. That's the conflict that these techniques have. You want to have very, very large searches of the model space, try all kinds of things, interactions, polynomials, whatever it happens to be, but at the same time return models that are actually the best fit to the data and not some overfit. And I guess the thing that you'd hope is the models that are closer to right, that are closer to what the data seems to be implying, are more useful. So this is the example I'll use, and it's the closest I could come up with. for the topic of the talk, which is a study that was conducted by Jennifer Ahern and other collaborators, including Sandro Galea. And it was looking at an alcohol density outlet in New York City and binge drinking. And so obviously there was some public health motivation for looking at this. And what we were basically going to started out as, you know, how if we look at this data differently, do we see this sort of linear increase in the number of establishments and linear increase in binge drinking, adjusting for other factors that could confound this, or are there nonlinear relationships, or can we even ask the question in a different way, like what happens if we have certain kinds of theoretical interventions? Other people have done, I mean, this isn't, you know, completely new, not looking at the data in a linear way. People do smooths and other things, but the idea is that can we have it built in as part of our procedure that we look through things that allow for nonlinearity and still present, give back estimates that are simple numbers. You know, if I do a machine learning model fit, like, you know, you might have heard of neural nets or something like that, and I'm going to get back something that may fit the data well, but it's completely incomprehensible. You can't look at it and tell you anything about the impacts of factors. So you need something, you need a strategy that can use these things, but uses them in a way that gives back a simple numbers that are summaries of the associations that you're interested in. Here's more background on the study. It was a telephone survey. It was not done, it included 59 community districts, which is what's going to define the exposure of interest, but it wasn't a study that was sort of stratified by community. It's just a random sampling of individuals, and then alcohol density was obtained independently based on the neighborhood, and then questionnaires on the phone regarding binge drinking and other confounders. So relatively high dimensional problem that we are looking at binge drinking, but there's obviously an alcohol number density of establishments with a lot of things that could confound that, and whether these are true confounders or not depends really on the investigator to state what they think comes first and what are things that should be adjusted for or not. That's nothing statistics can do. That has to be done by the person. So the goals of analysis were this mainly, and that is if we could conduct a study and sort of randomize alcohol establishment density in a neighborhood, and we could look at different levels of it, what would be the dose response, assuming nothing? So that's this thing right here. It's just a way that Y sub A, just think of that as the outcome. If, contrary to fact, you could give a neighborhood a particular level of density of alcohol places, and then we want to look at that as a function of A, so that's sort of a dose response, but it's defined not with regard to any model. There's no coefficient here. It's just defined with regard to some theoretical experiment. Or another one, which is, that's not really terribly interesting because I'm never going to go for intervention which gives people the maximum number of alcohol establishments possible, unless, of course, I found out it's good for you. I might want to say, I'm going to take all those that are above a certain value and put them down to some target value. Okay. Again, I'm not saying these are reasonable or even interventions you want to do. It's just an example for which you can look at these sort of techniques. So that's a different kind of parameter. It doesn't look at an association that's based on sort of universal application of something, but targeted based on the characteristics of the neighborhood. These are sometimes called dynamic treatments. So the thing is, which is related to this, is that it's a complicated, oh great, thank you. We're going to fit these complicated models in this, the statistical game, and those, I'll say that those, there's a whole literature in causal inference and how to define interesting parameters based on some model of the data, which just includes how you believe things are related. Nothing about the functional form, like A equals B times X, but just that this comes first and that comes after. Judea Pearl has been a pioneer in that field. And those inspire particular parameters to estimate. They obviously require lots of assumptions. You know what, you have to, you're doing the best job possible, knowing that, of course, that some of the assumptions probably aren't true, but given that you have this as a target goal and given the assumptions that you hopefully can justify, the game is that you can take these things to motivate an estimate that can rely on any model of the data. It doesn't have to be a linear model or a logistic regression model. It could be any fit. And that frees you now to try to fit the data well, to try to get a fit that has the least residual variance, that does the best job predicting the outcome. Once you do that, the hope is that you get the least biased estimate of the thing you want. I'll just zoom over this example right here. This is just I'm just giving a toy example of what this might mean. Let's just assume we have, for instance, an interaction of interest. And this right here, this graphs just look at the underlying model. So this is like a simulation. So W might be a set of confounders, and I'm looking at the interaction of A and Z. In this case, I looked at alcohol density and whether the subject drank before they came to the neighborhood. So is there impact that changes as you change the background of the subject? And if I had data this simple, I could simply look at the difference of I just measure the difference between the outcome within each level W if you have and do not have low versus high, and I can compare it to low versus high among those that did not drink before they came to the neighborhood, and I can simply average it across them. I'm doing nothing at all modeling-wise. I'm just taking the data as it comes and doing a non-parametric fit, and that's very easy to do if I have very, very simple data like this. This is really what the Mantle-Hansel is, if you've heard of that. It's something equivalent to this. So you can estimate an interaction of the two, an additive interaction, which would just estimate what would happen if I could make alcohol density high among non-drinkers and high among drinkers, and then average that interaction across all the levels of confounding. In reality, we don't have that possibility. I'm just going to skip these to right here. And so you need a method to estimate the model. And I'm just going to, I don't have time to obviously to go over this, but there is methods that are sort of optimal for fitting the data. They're based on cross-validation, and they try a huge number of models, and at the end, they use the cross-validation, which is splitting the data up in two parts and fitting it on one and testing it on the other, and they look at, they choose the model that does the best job on the data set that wasn't used to estimate it. And that sounds both sensible, but there's actually good theory that shows you that that converges to the best that you can do given your data and the set of models you try. And there's a package called the SuperLearner, which is a grandiose name, but it's available to try to fit your data. It's right now only in R and SAS, but it will be more widely available. It's very flexible fit. And there's just an example of the code. So now we're just going to apply it to this data. Again, this is the alcohol example and a map of where it was. Some characteristics of the population quickly. And then we'll first do that, estimate this particular one, which is an estimate of what would happen if everybody was set to 20 establishments per square mile, whatever it is, up to the maximum, and look at that change with the number of establishments. And this is what we got. So this is we have an underlying model that essentially you could hardly even write out. It's very complicated. It fits the data reasonably well, much, much better than a simple logistic regression. And then we use that to predict what would happen at 20 versus all the way up to 120, and we can look at this sort of dose response without specifying what the shape looked like while adjusting for those factors. This include interactions, include all kinds of things. And you see a fairly flat dose response and then much higher rates of binge drinking, relatively higher, as the establishment density goes up. But if we look at a different, and that's an interesting parameter, but it's not really an interesting parameter for intervention because, again, I would want to intervene by only reducing those that are too high. Okay, great. And so this is one that says, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm only going to change those observations that are above a certain amount and look at the effect of different interventions. I'll start at only changing those that are above 100, then changing those that are above 90, all the way down. And so this is sort of a measure of the potential impact of more reasonable interventions, which are based on the baseline characteristics of the particular neighborhood. and you see something very, very different, and that's because it's not just a function of that, almost like that coefficient you would see if you regressed a binge drinking versus all these covariates and looking at the coefficient on density. This also takes into account the number of communities that are at high and low, and so the impacts of interventions take into account the actual distribution of outlet density at baseline. And of course, you see something very different, which is you get very little effect until you get down to very, very low densities. And that's because there aren't that many ones at very high densities. They drive that relationship, but when you look at intervention, you're not really changing that many. Well, until you get way down to this part of the curve, and this is changing quite a few of them, that's when you start seeing a drop. So it gives you a target area to intervene. And again, it's all automated without based on a specific model and with targeting your particular parameter of interest. And I think I'll just stop there. Oh, I just want to have the fact that there are some very key references to read in this. One of the pioneers was, this is Jamie Robbins, and my colleague Mark Vanderlyn has worked a lot of the theory out. There's also, as I say, starting to be lots of software that will implement these things in an automated way. They're kind of complicated, but as I say, I think there's a lot of virtue to them because I think they are very good at attacking questions the way you ask them as opposed to traditional regression. Thank you.